Hello, I'm Warwick Ashford with a roundup of IT news highlights brought to you by Computer Weekly. First, a countdown of the past week's five most popular stories on computerweekly.com. At number 5, Marks & Spencer in the clear over loss of staff data. At number 4, government earmarks £300 million for laptops and broadband for poor households. At number 3, financial services meltdown will reshape IT industry. At number 2, Indian outsourcers bring thousands of foreign IT workers into the UK. And in top spot, Google Android heads for the shops. And in that story, T-Mobile and Google have launched the first mobile phone to run Google's open source Android software platform. Aimed at heavy mobile internet users, the T-Mobile G1 smartphone, made by HTC to a joint Google T-Mobile design, will be available in the UK in November, on contract only for around £40 a month, which includes unlimited internet time. And now for a look at some of the news analyses to be featured in the latest edition of Computer Weekly magazine. Tony Collins looks at the Labour Party's IT project history and says it came as no surprise that there was little debate on the state of its largest IT projects and programmes at the recent party conference. Tony, why do you say the lack of debate comes as no surprise?
Well, you wouldn't really want Labour to debate something that it knows it's got very wrong. And its history of handling big IT projects is a poor one. I think the problems have been down to the fact that Labour is very controlling by nature, and there's been some very large centralised IT programmes, particularly the National Programme for IT and the NHS. But we've looked at 13 major projects that have gone wrong, and the lessons from quite a few of those are that there was over-optimism and an underestimation of the risks.
So what's to be done about it?
Well, Labour thinks that you can solve these problems by having better project management, being able to control the suppliers in a more professional way, using project management methodologies, and we're not so sure that's the right way to go about it. Obviously, we're not experts, but we have chronicled IT projects and looked at some common factors, and a lot of those lead us to believe that the problems are more cultural than they are technical. These projects seem to be launched by politicians without sufficient challenge by those who would better understand the risks, and as a result, they only find out too late that they've underestimated the risks. At the outset of the project, there's enthusiasm from suppliers who've been selling solutions to civil servants hadn't seen initially. And they don't realise, because there's been so little challenge on the project, that midway through their initial assumptions have proved unrealistic. It's those that they really need to have in the early days. They need to listen to people who don't think it's a good idea, and then weigh up the concerns of the skeptics more than they have done. The National Programme for IT, for example, was only really given approval by people who wanted it to happen. There needs to be more skepticism, more challenge in the early days. And Weekly in particular has called for more openness, the publication of gateway reviews, the publication of internal audits, because you can't force individual accountability in government. The lack of accountability is part of the DNA of the government machine. What you can do is you can have the publication of internal audits and the gateway reviews, because civil servants and ministers will fear the exposure of their mistakes in real time, and they'll therefore make sure that they take account of the risks in the first place. If they don't feel that their mistakes are going to be exposed, or perhaps not exposed until they've left office, they're not going to worry too much about embarking on a fanciful project. So we want to see more scrutiny, and if you have that scrutiny, then possibly you may be able to solve or at least reduce the number of failures that we've seen in government.
Rebecca Thompson, who attended the party conference, writes that Labour politicians admit that the government has run into considerable problems with IT programmes and policy over the past 10 years. MPs say the government has found procurement, project management, and specifying what it wants from IT challenging. But they claim things are starting to improve as the IT industry strengthens its links with government. Cliff Sarin writes that Oracle's introduction of the Beehive Enterprise Collaboration Platform promises to give IT departments the ability to collaborate with customers and suppliers more effectively. The product will allow companies to share data between their ERP systems and email, voicemail, and instant messaging systems. He says Oracle, rather than bolt on its ERP business processes to an existing email platform such as Microsoft Exchange or Lotus Domino, is positioning Beehive as a replacement for these products. This means IT directors will need to assess whether the benefits of Beehive justify discarding their existing email systems. He says unlike rival platforms such as Duet or the integration features in Exchange and Domino, Beehive is built using a service-oriented architecture, SOA, which should minimize the programming effort required to integrate telephone and email correspondence with enterprise software. In another article by Tony Collins, he says the outcome of a landmark legal dispute between EDS and BSkyB could prove the most important yet for the IT services sector. The courts are expected to issue a judgment in early November after the costliest legal dispute in the history of the IT industry. Tony, why is this case so important?
Well, the BSkyEDS case is important potentially for the IT services sector because this is a case about claims of fraudulent misrepresentation. Now, if those claims are proven, it in effect sets aside the exclusion clauses and the limits on liabilities that the suppliers have in the contract. That would leave them exposed potentially to unlimited claims for damages. Those claims can include loss of profit or expected benefits and indirect losses. Misrepresentation has been something that the lawyers have steered clear of in the past because they thought that that judges would not be well disposed to claims like that. But according to lawyers, there have been some more recent cases where there have been claims of fraudulent misrepresentation, which have been settled out of court. So that may or may not have anything to do with the EDS case and BSkyB case. So the potential is that, from a supplier's point of view, is that they may end up with potentially unrestricted claims if their sales teams say something which the IT users could hold up as misrepresentation, fraudulent misrepresentation. We've also noted that in this case the legal costs are higher than in any other IT industry court case. We're talking here around about 70 million for both sides' legal costs, and that's not taking account of any appeal.
Also in the latest edition of Computer Weekly magazine, there's an article from me about the relative lack of antivirus and other anti-malware protection on company servers, particularly Linux-based servers. Industry experts say Linux-based servers are more at risk because Linux administrators are less likely to install antivirus software. Many believe that antivirus software is unnecessary because Linux-based servers are inherently more secure if correctly configured. This is reinforced by the perception that malware is chiefly a Microsoft Windows problem and the fact that businesses find installing anti-malware on servers can impact performance. You can find these articles and more IT-related news in the latest edition of Computer Weekly magazine or online at computerweekly.com.